ready for two guys who can handle the truth.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
But we can. Dave Palumbo.
Chris Aceto.
RxMuscle.com presents Heavy Muscle Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Heavy Muscle Radio. I'm Dave Palumbo, and I'm joined by Chris the Technician Aceto, calling in from overseas. We don't even know where Chris the Technician Aceto is. He's on the European tour. Leg two has just finished in Great Britain. And Chris, have you made the flight yet? Are you still in good old UK now?
Still in good old. I'm rooming with Eduardo, the Crazy Blades, Correa, and Flexitron Roden. And I nicknamed myself today, just for the tour itself, Technotron. I moved it from Technician to Technotron in honor of Sean Roden.
I like it. Well, Sean Roden is cleaning up, as I like to say. Two pro wins prior to the Olympia. He's got two more now after the Olympia, where he placed third. He's got one more coming up next week in Prague, Czech Republic, and it looks like he's going to make a clean sweep. Five pro wins, that would be for the year. He has got to be considered the bodybuilder of the year. While Phil Heath won the Olympia again, I think that Roden has got to be considered the MVP. What do you think?
I think he's the MVP, and either me or Ron Norman are the MVPs of guru technologies.
We'll talk about Ron Norman and the Kai Greene fiasco in a little bit. But we do have a great show tonight, Chris. I was home, Steve Bleckman used to say, manning the boards because of my torn quad, obviously still in recovery. We covered 10 bodybuilding shows this past weekend, 10 different shows all over the globe, and I never left my house. So I have to say, all is good at RxMuscle.com. I can't thank you enough. I know you were out there with Pierre Lamley helping you out, and I know Barry Stock was out there in Great Britain, and you guys did a great job, considering, what was going on out there. And I know you were helping Sean Roden, you had Masoom Butt, you had who else did you have?
Jose, Eduardo
Correa. You had a big group of guys out there, which
I may segue into like bikini and give what's the bikini guy guru's name?
Kimoto. Yeah, well, he's figure. He's more figure. And then they got the bombshell girls do the bikini stuff. So you're going to be like the, we should call you the Technotron bombshell or something like that. Or
Team Techno bombshell.
Techno bombshell or something like that, yeah. You can make up your own name. Now, some of the 10 shows we covered, one of them was the Fort Lauderdale Cup, speaking of Team Bombshell, run by Shannon Day and Team Bombshell down there. They had a great showing. We'll go over that a little bit later. The British Grand Prix, obviously, you covered. The Bros vs. Pros 12, Double Trouble, at the Europa Phoenix show out in Phoenix, Arizona. It was covered by most of our staff, Sally Taylor and Brian Hildebrand, Morgan Pagel, and, of course, Aaron Singham and PJ Braun were out there covering that. Derek Farnsworth representing the IFBB Pros at Bros vs. Pros out there, and he almost got the job finished. He went almost, when I say almost, he had to share the first prize money with Frank Nesdoba, who is a former Bros vs. Pros champion, also out of Phoenix, Arizona there, and they tied, Chris. I believe Frank Nesdoba out-squatted Farnsworth, and Farnsworth out-squatted him, out-deadlifted him, or something like to that degree. But it was a tie on total reps. They split the $2,000, $1,000 each. And I know they were both happy men. It was a very, very tough competition. It took place over the entire day, which is something we don't normally do. It was up on the main stage at the Europa Phoenix. They had a lot of activities going on. So they would do one event. They would take a break for an hour, and then they'd come back. So that's a little harder to do than the way we normally do it, which is straight through. Rebecca Klopp, who won the Bros vs. Pros 11 at the Derek Poundstone's gym in Connecticut, the last one we held, we didn't really know who she was. She flew all the way out there. She really put up some very impressive numbers and defeated the likes of IFBB fitness pro Danielle Delacat, who was representing the pros, and she beat Amanda Harris, Barbie Barbell, who is undefeated in lifting conditions. Lifting, yeah, that she has not lost, I think, in her entire career in like 15 years or some crazy amount.
How does she take it? She's not used to losing.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to get Aaron when Chewbacca calls in a little later. He's going to give us all the Bros vs. Pros updates. I don't want to go into too much detail, but it was a big, big difference. a very big upset for her. I know she wasn't happy. I don't know if she had any health issues or anything that was going on, but there was some serious, serious lifting done there. And I know I want to thank personally Ed and Betty Pariso. Without the two of them, this event would not have been possible. And seriously, you know, they believed in our event. They helped put up some of the prize money, and they made it happen. And I'm glad we were able to represent them so well. You know, the IFBB Titans Pro Women's Physique show was held out in California. John Lindsay show. Sabrina Taylor, the girlfriend to the big sexy Louis Uriel, who was covering the show for us out there. She wins her first pro show with Patricia Mello in second and Venus Nguyen in third. So that was a big win for her. And all the interviews, the winner's interviews, will be up on rxmuscle.com. Thank you to the big sexy for covering that show. But we did cover 10 shows. I know there were, we had photographers everywhere this past weekend, and it was a tremendous weekend. We also have a great show because later on the show, Chris, this is an exciting thing. We have Dave the Animal Batista, who is a WWE super switched over to MMA fighting now. He had his first fight, just won that. And I had bumped into him at Tampa over the summer, and he said he'd love to be on the radio show, and I gave him a call, and he'll be on a little later to tell us what he's been up to.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that interview.
He's a good, interesting guy about, you know, he was a bodybuilder originally, got into the WWE, won the title a few times, you know, was very popular. I'm going to find out exactly. I don't know the reason why he actually left it, but I know he opened his own MMA gym, and now he is fighting in the MMA, and he won his first fight. So it's interesting to see why these guys cross over. Sometimes they get bored. I know he likes to fight. He's a really he looks like an intimidating guy when you meet him, Chris, in person, but super nice. Once you know him, he's a sweetheart. So we're going to talk to him a little later. And I got a funny story before we do all our contest coverage, Chris, because my dad had called me up earlier, I think before the weekend started, and he was yelling. He's like, because my aunt was telling him about some story about there was a guy who jumped out of took a air balloon, a helium air balloon, up almost into the atmosphere of where the Earth's atmosphere meets space.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. And he free-falled in this like this crazy outfit he had on. And he actually achieved speeds of more than the speed of sound. He broke the sound barrier in free-fall, which is mm-hmm. ironic because I think it was like 20 years or 40 years to the date when Chuck Yeager did it in a vehicle or something, like an airplane. This guy did it with nothing on, just this like a suit. And so my dad had heard about this, and he was like, he was screaming at me. I'm like, Dad, what's the problem? Yeah, the story's true. And it was ironic that I had just seen it on TV. He's like, Where did you see it? I saw it on TV, Dad. How could it be possible? This guy did it with a parachute? I said, of course he did it with a parachute. How do you think he landed? He's like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. My dad thought that the guy fell the whole way with the parachute and that he achieved speeds of sound with the parachute on. Somehow he got this crazy thing, you know, mixed up. And he was just like maniacal about this. I don't know why he was so crazy about this story, and he couldn't believe it, and he was confused. And so I got him off the phone, and then I got a text message from, someone sent me an email that a kid I went to high school with about a story about a guy who jumped off the Verrazano Bridge and lived mm-hmm. this past Sunday. And it just happens to be a kid that I grew up with. He lived around the corner from me, from my dad. We went to nursery school together. We ran track in school together. He was actually a great bodybuilder, this kid, in high school. Natural bodybuilder, just a genetic freak. And he became a lawyer. He did like traffic court law. And he actually lived in my house around the corner. He rented a house for me with his crazy girlfriend he had for a while, for about 5 years. And we were always tight. You know, he was the kind of guy that can come into your life and out of your life. Always a little nutty. In high school, he's into boxing, so he wanted to get himself tough, so he would have me throw volleyballs at his head as hard as I could. And, you know, I was a sadistic dude in high school, so I loved it. You know, I would throw it so hard, I would knock him unconscious practically. And so he did crazy things. So when I heard he jumped from the Verrazano Bridge, it didn't surprise me that much, but I asked him, and he texted me back the next day, and I guess I found out he was, I didn't know he had been suicidal like a lot of his life, and sometimes you don't even know these things about people.
Yeah, sure.
I knew he was always a depressed kid, and he said he had researched it for 6 months on how to kill himself, and he came up with this plot, which obviously didn't work. I'm glad it didn't work. He jumped off the bridge. Not many people have lived jumping from the Verrazano Bridge. And as a matter of fact, I guess a lot of people have been doing that recently. I don't know, because of the economy or whatever, but they actually have like phone lines right there. Right before you jump, it says like, you know, if you're feeling suicidal, call us, you know, and we'll talk you down. He pulled his car up 228 feet bridge. He landed in the water. He broke a few vertebrae and fractured, I think, his collarbone. But other than that, I guess when he hit the water, he happens to be a good swimmer. He said, I couldn't believe I was still alive. And he swam to some rocks and they rescued him. So, you know, now he's in a mental ward, of course. And I told him when he gets out. Maybe.
And Verrazano connects Long Island to...
Staten Island.
We don't live in New York.
Brooklyn to Staten Island. It connects, right?
Brooklyn to Staten Island.
Well, Brooklyn is Long Island, so it's Brooklyn to Staten Island.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a crazy, crazy bridge. I mean, if you ever looked at it, you'd have to be crazy to jump off of it. So, you know, he obviously did want to kill himself. So, I felt bad for him. And this kid Larry used to shovel my dad's walk. You know, when he lived around the corner, he would mow the lawn, and he was a good kid. So I called my dad up, and I wanted to tell him about. I figured, you know, because my dad sometimes hits me with these crazy suicidal like thoughts he gets when his back is really bothering him. I said, Dad, you know, I got to tell you the story about Larry Ushaw, which I was shocked he actually remembered him. First, he's like, who? I said, Dad, you remember he lived around the corner, he used to shovel your walk, and he vaguely remembered him. So. I said, yeah, there was a, did you read about the, hear about the guy who jumped off the Verrazano Bridge? Now, my dad always hears about crazy news. He's like, what? I said, you know, the guy who jumped off, there was a guy who jumped off the Verrazano Bridge. Did you hear about it? Is this the guy that broke the speed sound barrier? He's like, I said, no. He's
like, stop.
He completely confused the whole thing. I said, Dad, no, this is Larry Ushaw. You remember him? Who is he? Who's Larry Ushaw? I said, Dad, the kid, remember he used to shovel the walk all the time and mow the lawn? He's what did he do? I said, he jumped off the Verrazano Bridge. He's like, he broke the sound belt. Listening to me. Did he use a parachute? No, Dad, he tried to kill himself. I said, he's like, but what happened? I said, well, he's alive. He made it. He's like, how do you live off jumping off the Verrazano Bridge? He didn't have a parachute. I said, Dad, you're not listening to me. He didn't try to do it as a stunt. He tried to kill himself. So my dad finally got through to him. And I said, Dad, the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, as bad as it seems, believe me, it can't be that bad. So I just wanted to give you a message. Maybe this was a message to you. So he got the message. He stopped talking about suicidal stuff, crazy stuff.
Well, so, maybe his back's okay then.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get, you know what the funny thing is? I've been telling my dad to get an epidural shot, because what they do is when you have really bad back arthritis, they shoot some stuff in there and it numbs up the back and then the pain goes away. He's like, I'm going Tuesday. I'm like, it only took you 3 years to fucking finally go. I mean,
how long does it last for once they put it in?
It depends. I think they do two or three shots, and then it usually lasts for a couple months. You know, but who? Even if my dad had to go once a month for it, who cares? You know,
sure. I mean,
he's in agony.
Sure.
So anyway, so that there was a lot of jumping this past weekend, and one guy broke the sound barrier. One guy almost killed himself, but he is alive. I'm happy to say, and I'm going to get him on the show when they release him from.
I was going to say, get him on the show. Yes, he has to say.
Yeah, he's a fun dude. He was. If I can get pictures of him from high school, you would not believe the physique this kid.
If you could get him on the bridge.
That would. Yeah, I wonder if they have cameras on the bridge. That would be good. But I'm telling you, the kid was what some physique. Some Bob Grushkin would have. Actually, you know what? This is how good this kid was. You remember when Zwick was involved with doing the Teen Nationals and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Lou Zwick called him up. He saw him at some local show and said, "Hey, I want to invite you to the Teen Nationals." And he didn't know what he was doing. He was just a genetic freak. He was probably the only natural kid in the show. They had it in Atlantic City, I remember that year. He drove down there and he told me that he got in trouble in the hotel because he was swimming in the pool with Pro-Tan on before the night show or something like that.
Oh my goodness.
The kid still plays third out of like 10 or 20, about 20 guys.
Yeah,
so.
See if you can get some. I'd love to post some pictures up.
I don't even know if he has. I'll ask him. Hope, you know. But like I said, if he's listening to the show.
Might get his mind, you know, not his mind off suicide, but it might give him some, you know, who knows? It might be, you know, therapeutic.
So.
Get him on the site and get him on the radio and post some pictures of when he was a bodybuilder. And maybe...
Larry, if you're listening we got to get you back into it. Remember, and the message that I'm trying to deliver is there's nothing that bad that you should ever want to kill yourself. Because you know what? If you have those type of thoughts... Put them off till the next day because usually it disappears, and that's what I've seen. Or seek help. You know, it's Chris. A lot of people don't realize that when you if you have people that you love or you know people who are talking like that, even if they're joking, when people talk about suicide, even though it's not, even if it seems like a joke, it's really not. You have to take it very seriously. From what I understand.
You're 100% right. No, you're right. You're right.
I mean, because when I did this, my psychiatry rotation in med school, that no one kids about suicide. If you mention it, you're thinking about it. And that's an important thing to identify, an important trigger type of situation. So don't take that too lightly. Now, there was a controversy we wrote about. I posted an article about who is the real trainer of Kai Greene from the Mr. Olympia and the Shiro Classic.
Yeah.
And the thrust of the article, if you haven't read it, was that Ron, amateur bodybuilder, and my accountant, CPA, he's also the business manager of Kai Greene, actually did Kai's diet, or so he says, and he went into a very I posted a little article about it, and I got him on last week's radio show. He gave us
I listened to the show.
What did you think of what he was saying about how he what he did for Kai?
He sounded very, very I came away with two things. He sounded I thought this, that he sounded credible, and that, you know, me personally, I know how other people handle things, but if somebody said, someone from Ireland said that they did Masoom Butt's diet, or if somebody said that they did Jose's diet for the show,
right,
I'd probably be on RX Muscle, you know.
Defending yourself, right?
Well, not only defending myself, but I'd be attacking the person who made the claim.
Right, right.
That's just me, you know. I mean, other people would just let it go and, you know, let it blow over and not handle it that way. But that's the way I see it. You know, I'd be hooting and hollering and everything else.
Look, all I know is that, you know, I know Ron Norman a long time, and he doesn't seem to, and he's not a liar. I don't see why he would try to take credit for something he didn't do. But I will say something in defense of George Farah. I don't think George Farah knew anything about the fact that Kai wasn't listening to him. In other words, George might be innocent in this whole thing because George didn't do anything wrong. If Kai didn't listen to George and listen to Ron and said, and you've had this, I've had clients probably listen to other people and not listen to me and whatever, or vice versa, or people were listening to me when they should have been listening to someone. If George didn't know, I mean, then George didn't do anything wrong. So I don't know. I told George that. He texted me several times. He was very mad at me. And I said, look, I'm just reporting. If you guys want to get on and give me a statement, I'll be more than happy to get you on the radio. I'll be more than happy to publish it. But they don't seem to be. Kai's not making a statement. So, you know, by Kai not making a statement, that tells me that there's something that he's hiding or he feels guilty about. And look, not only did Ron Norman come forth and say this, Ron Norman's wife, Nancy, had been privy to all these meetings and all these conversations, and she's certainly not a liar, you know?
I've been following it on the board.
She posted on the board, too. So, to me, Kai is not telling the truth about something. And I don't know what his reason is. If, you know, look, if Ron helped him, give the guy the credit. At least tell George what the deal is, you know, because it's not fair to anyone all around. I mean, certainly not fair that if Ron put all this time and effort into Kai and he's not giving him any credit, that's kind of, to me, that's a little shitty. What do you think?
Yeah, no, you know, when you come out and as Ron has done and you make those type of statements, you're either telling the truth, you're a liar, or you're a lunatic. Then you're telling me he's, you know, you've known him for years and he's, you know, seems like a forthright type guy. And if your taxes are, you know, done on time, maybe he's not a lunatic either. So it just leaves me to believe that he had some involvement with it. You know, like I said, if someone like, you know, someone came and said, oh, I helped Jose, I'd be like, you know, screw you.
Yeah,
you didn't help Jose. Okay.
Right. But Ron told me also, and you know, maybe this is why Kai's not saying anything, that he has 50 pages of text messages that he'd be willing to release to me to post on RX Muscle if Kai did make a statement and to the degree of lying or trying to validate that Ron didn't help him. So the fact that Kai's not saying that might also be a testament to the fact that he's afraid Ron's going to release these text messages, which would tell all, you know.
Wow, we'd have to have like you'd have to have the site like pay per view for that day.
Yeah, exactly. We'd probably crash the site. We did crash the site almost a couple times when we posted
this
that
weekend
article.
with 10 contests.
Yeah, absolutely. But look, you know, it just goes to show you, you know, this happens all the time. But when it's at the elite level of where, you know, we're talking about Mr. Olympia competitor type guys, it becomes magnified. And I know Ron is a very hard worker. He's a very loyal friend. So when I guess he felt slighted by Kai in a sense, and I don't know if the public arena was the right way to air it, but you know what, I guess he felt strongly enough that he felt that he wanted everyone to know the truth, and Kai has not come forth and said anything, so right now where's the story go
from here?
I don't think it goes anywhere if Kai doesn't make a statement, but unless Ron tends to give me those text messages, but I guess Ron just wanted everyone to know, and Ron was very upset, you know, that Kai didn't give him the credit, and I guess he didn't charge Kai for anything. You know, he was just helping him as a friend, and he had done some other favors for him along the way, and you know, he was upset. Look, it happens. I've seen it happen multiple times. You've seen it happen, and
yeah,
that's
of course,
it.
There's nothing really else
to talk about with regard today. You know, I was reading a study, Chris, and they did a study trying to compare what is the reason. The two major, you know, we have two major causes of high blood pressure, really, in the body. And a lot of bodybuilders suffer with this.
Go ahead.
And do you know what the two major causes of high blood pressure are?
I would say obesity would be one. Would diabetes be a cause? Would that be a result of?
Stress, believe it or not, is one. And greasy fried foods, okay, are the two most commonly held beliefs people get. High blood pressure, believe it or not, and they did a study to try to determine which was more the worst effect. Would you have any guess?
I would say stress.
They actually came out tied, believe it or not. So it's just
tied.
As
it's like bros versus bros.
Exactly. But it's interesting because. When a person is stressed out, Chris, I guess the stress hormones, cortisol and aldosterone levels go up. It causes a tremendous hoarding of sodium in water, which raises blood pressure. So that's like an immediate effect. And that makes sense. And eating greasy, fried foods seems to have the same effect. For some reason, when you eat those foods, it causes the body to store sodium. Because you can eat clean foods and you don't really, and you can eat a lot of salt and you won't hoard it, you won't store it. You know that.
True.
I know bodybuilders that drink soy sauce and they don't have high blood pressure. So it's really not the blood pressure, but for some reason, greasy saturated fats tend to have a storage effect. So you know if you have high blood pressure, you want to try to avoid stress as much as possible, and obviously. You want to try to avoid greasy fried foods. Most bodybuilders don't have a problem with that. But then again, you have the Lee Priest. Remember when Lee Priest used to eat Kentucky Fried Chicken in his off-season all the time?
Yeah, that's right. He used to grow from it.
I grew from McDonald's, which probably wasn't the best either. It's funny. When I ate McDonald's, I never had high blood pressure. When I started eating clean after I stopped eating McDonald's, I got high blood pressure. So who knows? It comes with the territory as you're getting older. Let's talk, though, Chris, about the British Grand Prix, because that's where you were. I want your expertise on this. We talked a little earlier about Sean Flexitron Roden winning two in a row, four for the year. How good was Roden? Was it even close between him and any of the other competitors?
he was... you know, this is the interesting thing about Sean, is that because his shape is so good, and right now, because he's still in condition, he has different looks. Last weekend, he was really peeled in Madrid. And here, he was, quote, fuller, which he actually really was fuller, but he still had really good condition. So at times, in certain shots, he takes on, at least in the lower body from behind, a Coleman-esque type look. You know what I mean? With the crazy glutes and hams.
Mm-hmm.
And on the side shots, he's got the crazy glutes and hams. So he looked really impressive here. He looked like the clear winner. I don't think he dominated, but he looked like the clear winner from prejudging. And it's a two-day show, Saturday. Sunday, he actually held really good condition for the Sunday show. And he picked up his fourth big check and fifth big check of the year.
Now, it seemed to me that a lot of these guys weren't at their best, and because of that, it enabled Roden maybe not to be at his best and still easily win. Would that be an accurate statement?
I think that in a nutshell, that you know, that is how it panned out. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did at his best, but you know, people who haven't seen him, I think, and seen him for the first time in person, were like, "Whoa, you know, Sean Roden, mate, he looks unbelievable." When the fact is just, you know, some of the guys are just tired. You know, they're off. They're not at their total best.
Right.
And it made him look like he was in probably better shape than he actually was.
Gotcha. What about Johnny Jackson? Looked very impressive in the pictures to me. Maybe not like dry enough, hard enough, but he looks like he's put a lot of size on. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah, he has put on a lot of size. He was better in pre-judging than the finals, and he was better this week than last week. And he was impressive last week. And I had talked to him and Tony a little bit before prejudging, and they were very excited to see Lee Priest running the show. Lee Priest. Sorry, Lee Thompson. Lee Thompson running the show. Yeah. Kentucky Fried Chicken is on my mind, I guess. With
I
Lee.
Guess so.
But they were, you know, meaning that that they were going to mix these guys up. And, you know, Johnny felt slighted last week, and I thought he was slighted. You know, I don't think Johnny got the calls that he should have got by any means last week. And rightfully so, he was in the mix in the prejudging this week. And I agree with you. He's put on size. He was tight enough in prejudging that his legs looked, you know, really good. They look good. And, you know, he's got a ton of muscle. And it was hard for me to figure out who was going to be second, him or Tony, because, you know, they're different physiques. Tony in the lineup looks like he's going to win the show. He was full as hell. But he was too soft from behind on the back double, which held him back. And, of course, Johnny Jackson's got to kill a back double bicep. So I think that's how it played out, which relegated Tony into third place.
Right. What about the X-Man? What's going on with him? Too many shows, you think? And he's just not able to peak? I mean, he's placing top three at these shows. So, I mean, I guess he is making a mark for himself. He's making a few bucks. Is it just too much for him and at his age to keep, you know, bringing in the kind of conditioning he needs to win? Because obviously these other guys are leaving the door open, but Freeman's not closing it, that's for sure.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think it's just, you know, it's hard to, at any age, to be able to run show to show, like the amount of shows that he's done, and actually improve every show. You know, there's something called fatigue, and it just catches up to your body, and it wears you down. So the things that you're used to manipulating, I think, you know, the sodium, the carbs, whatever it is, you know, to try to peak, your body just, it just doesn't respond like you're just doing one or two shows. Mm-hmm. Even though a lot of guys like Tony traditionally gets better from show to show to show, you're traveling, you're in Madrid, you're taking these crazy late night flights or early morning flights over to England, you know, your body's fatigued. And I think that plays into it, because was he in shape? Pretty good shape, yes, especially from the front and side. It just, the back double and the back left spread held him back. So I think, I don't think it's so much age as it wear and tear. Right.
Now, you told me Robert Petrakowicz, who finished very impressed with him, you actually shocked, I think, this call out. Should this guy have been higher? I mean, his conditioning from the pictures looks like it might have been the best in the lineup.
Yeah, he had the best condition in the open lineup, and the odd thing about him is that in prejudging, you will understand this because you've been around the sport, he has a wider waist. I wouldn't call it crazy wide. Last week he was in tremendous condition, and in prejudging I noticed, okay, this guy's in tremendous condition, he's got a boxy slash wide waist. He was, this week he came into the show super condition, but he was flat. Right. But on a super condition, truly lean bodybuilder, being flat, you still have this illusion of fullness, but his waist looked okay. You know what I mean? Like everything got flat, but so did his waist.
Right.
So I thought the look, I don't know if it was deliberate or just by chance, that a flat shredded look that he had beat last week's look in terms of where it would place. And yet they didn't have him in the first call out, which I was really shocked, because who did they have in the first call out? Raleigh Winkler.
Saying he didn't deserve it?
he didn't deserve it.
No.
That's how Raleigh Winkler. When I say it like that, that means he didn't deserve it.
Now, what we saw Winkler looking good a couple weeks ago. What went wrong here for him? Is he back to his old flat self?
He's just flat, man. I mean, I don't know if someone just doesn't call him and say you're flat and eat. I mean, it's like he could eat for a month and he'd still need to continue to eat to get his fullness back.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
You know?
What do you think?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, maybe I think Winkler's a victim of doing too many shows, too. When he starts doing too many, his physique starts suffering and looking the worse for it. So I think that might have been.
I would like to see him come in just big and round where someone says, you're just not lean enough, but damn, were you big and round. I think he'd be better.
Right. So Winkler finishes in sixth, Ronnie Raquel in fifth, Eric Fankhoser in seventh, and Hidetami Yamagishi in eighth. Was that justified, or was he robbed?
He should have been higher. He was in the third call out of the prejudging, so he must have been demoralized.
Yeah.
Because he was still in, you know, good condition. He was flat and small, and that's what's going to happen when you're not a big guy and try to continue to hold that type of condition.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But even though he was, quote, flat and small for him, he still should have been in the second call-out, which would have pushed him into 6th to 8th. You know what I mean? Somewhere in that range. Right. He looked good, you know, just same thing, wear and tear. You know, he's done a lot of shows. He's been doing all these same shows Roden's been running.
In the 212 class, Flex Lewis, who just came off winning the 212 showdown at the Olympia this year, comes in here, dominates. From the pictures, he looked great, Chris. Deserved winner?
I had Eduardo Correa winning the show.
Who finished in fourth. What was... Why did you have Eduardo Correa beating him?
I had... for two reasons. The fact that... to me, Flex was definitely better at the Olympia. He was full of hair, but it hurt him. And then two, when they compared them together at the Olympia, there was times at this show where I thought, just Lewis doesn't even look hard enough to be considered hard when standing next to Correa, or dense enough too. Not only hard enough, there's the hard factor,
right?
And there's the dense factor. Mm-hmm. And when they were comparing them, like on several shots, I thought, this looks like a very, very youthful or young, non-mature looking physique compared to Correa.
Right.
And I thought, too, okay, am I too close to Eduardo Correa? And I said, no, wait a minute. I helped Masoom Butt and Jose Raymond as well. So I could, I'm not making those arguments for them to place higher on those calls. So right. I just thought Eduardo was beyond gnarly for the show.
I got to tell you, I was looking at the pictures, and I don't know if it's accurate. Jose Raymond looked very good, who finished in third here. I probably would have had him in second, no worse. He looked like he was challenging Flex Lewis here. He was full, he was ripped. I thought he was better than the Olympia here.
Yeah, he was better than the Olympia. And the irony was that he was surprisingly like denser, harder, and he was up a couple pounds from the Olympia. And he had asked me about that, and I said, sometimes you just can't go by your weight. You know, I mean, just you look big and you look hard, and don't get caught up in being a little bit heavier than you were there, because people thought at the Olympia, oh, you look great, and they would say, what do you weigh? And he's like, God, I haven't been this light in a long time.
Yeah.
So there was this idea of returning to like a lightweight, when in fact actually going up a couple, I think helped him. Plus, I thought he looked great, and he traveled to India, did that show. You know, he went back home, flew back over here, did this show. He was really happy to be. To beat Eduardo, he was happy.
How would Flex Lewis and Jose Raymond had done in the open? That's a good question for you.
Well, they at the end of the show, I don't know if you know this, they took the top six in the 212 and put them on the right side of the stage, and the top six in the open class and put them to the left of them, and they ran them through some mandatories. Really? All on the stage at the same time.
And yes. How did they look?
Well, they, you know who stuck out? You had on one side, you could really appreciate the shape of Sean Roden.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the right side, your eye went to Jose Correa and when they did their poses, but just standing, which is an attribute or a compliment to Flex, just standing there, you see Flex.
Would Flex have been second place behind Roden?
Arguably, he would have been top four for sure.
Wow. That's all right. That's an impressive statement. I'm just asking your advice. Eduardo Correa has to settle for fourth. We talked about that a little bit. Sami El Haddad finishes in second place. Sami seems to be get a lot of love when he's in Europe and when he competes overseas. Deserved, or was he not at his best?
I would not have had him second.
No?
At all. When he first came out, here's my assessment. And my first assessment of someone is usually spot on the money. Is when he came out, I said, wow, great stance, great front lat spread. And then, his legs are weak and lack density. Look at the legs in the lineup. You got Flex, you got Jose, you got Correa's gnarliness, and then you got his legs. And then from the side, his legs are weak, from behind, they're weak. There's not a lot of back thickness. To me, he's a guy in the lineup with two shots, the crunch shot and front lat spread.
Yeah.
I should be very happy leaving tonight's show because you could very easily argue that he could have been as low as probably fifth in that show.
Interesting. Well, this 212 lineup was so good that it's just a testament to, if you look at some of the people who finished in Guy Cisternino, 12th place, James Llewellyn, who had been a good guy, up there in top five at most of these shows, 9th place. So this was like an Olympia, really. And, Neil Hill, I guess, who was involved in promoting this show, they did a great job and they got a great lineup here. Two great champions, Flex Lewis and Sean Roden. And then they had a bikini division. Michelle Brennan won that. From the pictures, she looked beautiful. And all these pictures and coverage and placings, all up on rxmuscle.com in the gallery, contest gallery. You can check out all these pictures all weekend long. We have wrap-ups coming up. We have contest winners, interviews going up. Lots of stuff still happening here. Plus, stay tuned a little later in the show. Aaron Jabaka-Singerman will be on after the commercial break to talk about the Fort Lauderdale Cup with me and to break down the Bros versus Pros 12 double trouble that took place this past weekend in Phoenix, Arizona at the Phoenix Europa Show. And a little later on the show, the Animal, Dave Bautista, WWE superstar and now MMA fighter extraordinaire. Stay tuned. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on rxmuscle.com. Houseofpain.com. The biggest and strongest people in the world wear House of Pain clothing. House of Pain fighters hit harder, and House of Pain lifters are stronger. Put some attitude in your next workout with House of Pain. Check out the latest House of Pain gear at houseofpain.com or call 1-888-463-7246. That's 1-888-463-7246. Unleash your inner beast with House of Pain clothing. Visit houseofpain.com. Tad the Diet Coach, contest prep guru for bodybuilding, bikini, physique, and figure. Go to tadthedietcoach.com, an expert on nutrition and exercise science with over 20 years experience in fitness and bodybuilding. Tad the Diet Coach offers a complete scientific and individually focused contest prep or a full off-season plan that is custom tailored for your own unique needs. This kind of diet coaching is a premium coaching service that includes weekly conference calls, individually based diet and supplement plans, specific cardio and workout schedules, and constant contact during the contest prep or off-season process. Tad the Diet Coach, author of the Diet Recipe Cookbook, and also the creator of the Coach's Choice Whey Protein Isolate, which is the absolute best-tasting premier isolate on the market. Tad the Diet Coach will get you to the next level. Go now to tadthedietcoach.com or send an email to info@tadthedietcoach.com.
Quest Bars from Quest Nutrition is Dave Palumbo's favorite protein bar. It's the only bar that's not simply a candy bar in disguise. There's no sugar or sugar alcohols, no soy, and zero trans fat. Quest Bars contain only the highest grade protein from whey and milk protein isolates. Quest Bars are also the lowest carb bar available, only 4 to 5 grams, and they all come from nuts. Quest Bars are also gluten-free. Quest Bars were specifically made for people who are serious about their physiques and who want the highest quality ingredients. Best of all, they taste great. Learn more about Quest Bars by visiting questproteinbar.com and try them out for yourself. Check out questproteinbar.com now.
Hey man, this is Mike Chain from Six Pack Shortcuts. If you want to build rip muscle fast, then I just posted a new video you've got to see. You can check it out at mikechainmusclebuilding.com. In that video, I'll show you why I never do traditional bodybuilding workouts anymore, and I'll show you the insane new style of working out I'm using instead called afterburn training. The reason why I like afterburn training is that it allows me to build lean muscle fast while still staying lean and ripped. So go to mikechainmusclebuilding.com now to find out how you can start building muscle faster. One more time, that's mikechainmusclebuilding.com. If you want to build rip muscle fast, then I just posted a new video you've got to see. You can check it out at mikechainmusclebuilding.com. I'll show you why I never do traditional bodybuilding workouts anymore to find out how you can start building muscle faster. One more time, that's mikechainmusclebuilding.com. I'll see you there.
Out on the edge of fitness and endurance, there's a line. It's where winners and losers are defined. That's the narrow place where Gamma O gives the serious competitor the extra step. That extra kick nobody knew was there. Gamma O raises your testosterone level naturally and legally. So before you step up to the line one more time, be prepared to bring it with Gamma O, the all-natural testosterone booster. Gamma O is available nationwide at General Nutrition Centers or on the web at GammaO.com.
P28 High Protein Bread is the official bread of RX Muscle. Are you looking to incorporate more protein into your meals or just want to enjoy bread again? Then look no further. Try the 100% natural P28 High Protein Bread. P28 High Protein Bread is a formulated revolutionary breakthrough product packed with whey protein isolate, 14 grams of protein per slice, 12 grams of carbs, 8 essential amino acids, and made with 100% whole wheat. Fear bread no more. Build a better body with P28. Order today at highproteinbread.com. P28 is also now available at bodybuilding.com and many other retailers. Order now. highproteinbread.com. P28 bread. RX Muscle approved. So are you from Australia, paying far too much for supplements with the inflating whey and amino prices? Why not check out the all-new RX Muscle Australia for the latest Australian and worldwide content and coverage. While you're there, check out Bulk Nutrient Supplement Store, the official supplement store for RX Muscle Australia. You can visit Bulk Nutrients at bulknutrients.com.au, your one-stop shop. And also check out the all-new rxmuscle.com.au. RX Muscle Australia, the truth in Australia. In bodybuilding.
RXMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up to the minute news and more. Visit the RXMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RXMuscle.com.
Heavy Muscle Radio.
Welcome back to Heavy Muscle Radio. I'm Dave Palumbo. On the line now with a man who's been missing these past couple weeks, but he has been very busy doing other things. He's the one, the only, Aaron Jabaka-Singerman in the United States for a very brief period of time this week.
That's right, Dave. It's Monday, and this time, Wednesday, in 2 days, I will be gone again to the Czech Republic in Prague, which a lot of people, you know, I complained a little bit, not complaining, but, you know, I mentioned that I would have liked to have stayed home. I thought for some reason that I was leaving on Thursday. And so I was all in my head that I thought I was leaving, you know, Thursday, and I told Dariel Thursday, and I guess I've been telling everybody Thursday. And then I looked at my ticket, and it turns out I leave Wednesday afternoon. And so I put on Twitter, I was disappointed to be leaving. But Jack had said, "You're going to Prague. That's the place is awesome." Dennis James said it's one of his favorite places in the world. So
I'm very jealous.
So maybe it's not, you know, maybe I need to reconsider, and, you know, one more day in Prague maybe isn't the worst thing in the world.
Well, I'm very jealous. Obviously, you and I were supposed to be going together to Prague until I tore my quad in India at the Shiro Classic there, and I've been grounded.
This is the first time you've ever had to like sit out and miss stuff. It is interesting, right? You do feel a little jealous, don't you?
Wow, it's terrible. I feel like helpless almost.
Missing out.
Yeah. Not missing out as much. Man. I kind of feel like, I don't know, I'm like I should be there. Like I feel guilty almost to a little bit, but I got to be honest with you. You and Chris Aceto and everyone's been doing such a great job picking up the slack that I feel very confident when I see you guys there and I see the covers that you guys have been providing. You've finished up, obviously, Sharu. You went to, on the last minute, you and PJ flew out to the Bros vs. Pros this past weekend, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. You'll be doing Prague this weekend. You know, it's funny because I think it might have been a year ago you said to me, I want to travel more. I said, don't worry, you're going to travel more. You're going to travel so much that you're not going to want to travel anymore. And you told me, no, impossible. And now you kind of got a little taste, I think, because this has been a rough couple of weeks for you. From the Olympia, you went Olympia in Vegas. You went Shiro in India. You went to Spain for the Arnold Europe. You did Bros vs. Pros in Phoenix last weekend. Now you're going to be in Prague. I think we give you a week off, don't we, after that?
Yeah, I got a week off before Nationals, thankfully.
So
that a week off sounds like a long time to me, actually. Now, I mean, 2 days, 3 days. I'm like, really? 3 days? Wow, what am I going to do? Unfortunately, I have other responsibilities, you know, with a wife and baby. It's not like there's really any time off and then you know, everything else. But I got to tell you, you know, I want to make a comment on that. I was very impressed. I was surprised and impressed by you because, you know, Spain, the Arnold Europe was a big show.
Yeah.
And it was just me and Chris Aceto, obviously Pierre Lamley taking pictures. But I was concerned. I was wondering how you would handle it, how stressed out you would be with not being there and not being involved, more involved, you know. And by the way, Chris really stepped up. And you know, Chris has no problem holding the camera, interviewing somebody.
Wow.
He'll do anything.
You know
what I mean?
Great.
And some people aren't like that. You know what I mean? Some people have, like Chris, you know, people of Chris's stature.
Sean Ray wouldn't be holding a camera, is what you're saying.
No, Sean, exactly. I'm trying to be nice, but yeah. Sean Ray would never hold the camera under any circumstances. He would walk away, you know? Yeah. So Chris is great at interviewing. He's also great at holding the camera, which is nice. So I was surprised that you were so not stressed out about it. So I think that's a compliment to myself and Chris that you trusted us enough that you were able to go to sleep early and rest your injury and not be stressed out.
Yeah, a year ago, if this was happened a year earlier, I would not have been that relaxed. I probably would have needed to be given like IV Valium probably to relax. But no, I think we have a really good group of guys and a good team. And I think you know, you've gone to enough shows, and Chris has gone to enough shows. Now that you guys know what's going on there, and I thought we did some great coverage, and you know, a lot of people gave us good feedback on what we've been doing. Now, it is difficult because people don't realize, you know. You know, Chris has been staying in Europe for the last 3 weeks with Sean Roden, which has got to be really stressful to him and his family life. I know it is. I know his wife's not too thrilled about that. But it might be more stressful flying back and forth, which is what you're doing, you know. So
right.
It's a lot of miles you got on your frequent flyer thing there. You're going to be like you're going to hit a million miles probably pretty soon.
Unfortunately, I'm flying Delta to Prague, which I'm not happy about. Dave wanted to fly Delta, so we got Delta specifically for Dave so he could get his miles, and now Dave doesn't go.
Well,
so
let me explain something. This is how crazy you are with your miles. You will make pit stops. Aaron will fly non-direct flights just to get the miles rather than go direct, you know, on a cheaper flight, which I find absolutely insane on your part.
I can't explain that, though.
You can't explain it.
Okay, so this is the deal, right? When you were at the level where I am now, PJ enjoyed it in Phoenix because, thank God, U.S. Airways is a member, so some of my benefits transferred over.
Right.
But I skipped the security line, which, like when we were in Phoenix, there was an hour-long security line, so I go right to the front, and since PJ is with me as a companion, he gets to come with me also, so he walks right through. So that's worth a lot because I don't like to wait in the line. And then I get my bag for free, which saves you money because if you're traveling with two bags, if you're going to Europe,
why would you want to travel and make a pit stop in another country?
This is the key. Now, once you get to the level where I am, you get upgraded. I'm the first one, almost always, the first one to get an upgrade to first class if I am, if there is an available seat in first class, and there almost always is.
Right.
So on domestic flights, 9 times out of 10, literally 9 times out of 10, I get to sit first class and get a nice meal, get to relax a little bit more, a nicer seat. And it adds up. And I feel like there is some kind of aspect, some part of my psyche that likes the facts that the fact that I'm adding up the miles to try to get closer and closer to the goal, which would be the 100,000 in a year. Because if you get 100,000 in a year, you get 6 international upgrades that you can use yourself or you can give to somebody else. And those can be worth, I mean, depending on where you're flying, it could be worth, you know, $50,000.
I know, I understand. $30,000. I understand. But you're not, convenience has got to be a factor somewhere along the way. All right, let's talk about what's going on. We're boring people with frequent flyer miles here. The Bros vs. Pros 12, Double Trouble. By the way, this is the first Bros vs. Pros I missed. You know, this was my brainchild, so this was very traumatic for me not to be there.
Yeah.
But you guys did a great job, Sally and Brian and Morgan and you and NPJ, the whole crew that was there helping out. Bros vs. Pros Double Trouble was called that because I decided for the men and the women we were going to do 2 events, and we were going to make the weights a little lighter to entice more of a CrossFit workout crowd, which is what Ed and Betty Parisa were trying to promote at the Europa Phoenix show. This is the first of its kind. There was no bodybuilding fitness figure event there whatsoever. It was actually Bros vs. Pros was probably one of the highlights of the weekend. You can give me more input into that. Give me an idea of what it was like doing it on a main stage as opposed to like that we usually do it in the gym.
Well, I was, you know, when I got up there, I was a little bit, you know, I was happy to be doing it, but I was sad for you because it is something that you would have definitely enjoyed. We were on the main stage. This is the stage that you would normally see. If there was a bodybuilding event, it would have been on this big stage. And they had, you know, the normal Europa. We had a podium on the side, and we see the deadlift platform and the squat platform. They switched off back and forth, but that was in the middle of the stage. We had the cameras in the middle, and there was a crowd that sitting in the press area seats. And then, you know, we had about 5 or 6 rows back that were pretty full. And then people were watching from all the other booths and kind of assembled around to watch. And some people, you know, watch for a little while and walk away. But it was awesome because not only we were mic'd up through the video cameras from our the Landolier mic that was on my jacket coat, but we both, PJ and I both had a microphone for the PA system. So everybody watching could hear us. And I had never done anything like that before. It's something that I've always been interested in potentially doing. You know, I always, when I see Bob Chick up there doing it, emceeing it, I always know that, like, I think, you know, like, I could do that. You know, I don't know if I could be as corny as Bob, but I know that I feel like I could do something like that at some point. I've seen you do it before, and you've done a good job emceeing shows and kind of being a master of ceremonies. So having PJ and I up there, we had a lot of fun. Like, we joked around and we were goofy, and I think that we made it, helped make it a show, and it was a great experience.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you know, the crowd was really what made it, from what I understand, from talking to all the people there. The crowd was huge, much bigger than we would get in a gym. Obviously, there's a lot more room. Some people like the more intimate setting of the gym, but I think that it added some more mystique to the event. It added more hype and hoopla to the event, and I think that was important because I want this event to be play to a bigger audience, and I think that it has potential to do so. So I want to thank Ed and Betty Parisa personally for bringing this event there and helping us fund what we were going to do. And I'm unfortunately sorry that I couldn't make it, but you guys did a great job. Talk to me a little about the event a little bit, because the men had to squat and deadlift 315 pounds. Now, Derek Farnsworth has been wanting to do our event for about 2 years now, and he's always had, you know, things going on at the same time and wasn't able to do it. We got him this time around. He represented the IFBB pros. He was the smallest and lightest IFBB pro we've ever had representing the pros, yet he proved to probably be one of the more tenacious ones. It's funny because the smaller pros tend to do better. I remember Jose Raymond won the squat challenge we did a few years ago when 405 for reps. He knocked out 30 and won that. Farnsworth, however, was pushed very hard by Frank Nesdoba. Talk to me a little bit about what that competition was like and how it turned out.
Well, it was really head-to-head between these two guys, and the fact that it was 315 was interesting because this is, like you said, the lightest weight we've ever used. But I think that it didn't make it that much easier, which is an interesting thing to say. But I feel like that the lactic acid buildup and the amount of pain that goes on when you're talking about reps, you know, above 30 into the 40s and stuff like that, it becomes a lot. So I'm not sure that the weight made that much difference. It was still enough to really hurt to build up that lactic acid. So the battle between these two guys was pretty epic. I mean, I guess you could say that Frank Nesdoba surprised everybody. I know that he was the champion, a previous champion, but I just assumed that Derek Farnsworth would come in and kill everybody.
Yeah, me too. Were you surprised that the deadlift rep count was not higher than it was, or do you think that the fact that they did the squat first greatly limited the amount of deadlifts they were able to do?
I think it did, because I saw a video of Derek deadlifting where he was like a practice video, and he did 20 in 20 seconds, no joke. Like, right. It was like a 30-second video. He got himself wrapped up, and he started going, and he hit 20 by the end of the 30-second video. So with no stopping. You know, on this one, he lost his grip, and he was dying at 30, basically. He was already, you could tell, he was losing his grip and having problems. I think that they're not used to that. Also, Derek was very lean, I have to tell you, because he was still lean competing. From the Olympia.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting also. What's interesting, though, Aaron, I just want to point out, is that Farnsworth and Nesdoba did, what, 36 reps in the deadlift?
Yes, that's right. They both tied on both things.
Yeah, I think they did 35 reps in the squat or something like that, right?
They both tied. They literally tied on both things. That's never, ever happened that we had a dead tie.
And you'd think Farnsworth going last would be able to squeak out one more rep, especially on the deadlift. And that obviously wasn't the case. Fighting just to get to go for the tie. The interesting thing is obviously Nesdoba greatly outweighed Farnsworth, so that gave him a little bit of an advantage. Mark Lurch actually did more reps with 405 in the deadlift than these guys did with 315. Now, like I said, it was their deadlift was done after the squat, so I don't know if Lurch would have been able to get 43 reps with 405. He was supposed to come. I still don't know what happened to him or where he or what went on, but he did not show up. I don't know how many reps Lurch could have done in the squat, but I suspect he probably would have been right up there with these guys, if not beating them. So I liked when there's a close match, and obviously it was so close that it was a tie. We couldn't even decipher the tie because the rep count was exactly the same. So they split the $2,000, $1,000 each, and that worked out real well. More exciting, perhaps, though, I think was the women's event, where Amanda Barbie Barbell Harris was really, I guess, the girl to beat, even though she wasn't the pro. Danielle Delacat was representing the pro. She's an IFBB fitness pro. But Amanda Harris had won two of these events already from us, and she had shown, you know, tremendous metal. Here's a girl who never, ever, ever lost a strength event in powerlifting or anything else she's ever done. She came in here, and Aaron, what happened? She seemed to be suffering from what I was watching at home.
I mean, a lot of these girls were unbelievable, Dave. I mean, just absolutely shocking how far they pushed themselves. And Barbie Barbell went in there with the right mental attitude, but you know what? She's a powerlifter, you know, and once you get into 50 plus reps of anything, you know, she really, her grip seemed to be giving out, and she kept retightening and readjusting, and she would pause at the top, basically restrap herself onto the bar while basically hitching the bar up on her leg, and her leg was very, very irritated red. She would try to re-grip it over and over again, but at some point it just became too much.
Well, I've seen her do that at a previous event, and she knocked out over 100 reps. So, and while she was sick, so something must have been going on here. I don't know. I noticed she cut her hair, and she also changed it from blonde to dark. I don't know if, you know, it had the Samson effect. You know, she lost her strength when she cut her hair. I don't know if that's the case or not. But, you know, did you ask Amanda Harris backstage what might have gone wrong? Because this obviously was not something that we typically see of her. Usually she's out in front.
Yeah, you know, after it was over, she seemed pretty disgusted with herself. And I know that I asked her after the squat, because she wasn't really happy even with the squat. And she basically said that, you know, it was just, it was pretty much too much for her, that she wasn't she was disappointed. I mean, the truth is she didn't really have a real reason. You know, she just hadn't trained. She'd only practiced twice. And Rebecca, who won, Rebecca Klopp. Ended up, she told me that she had practiced many times, that she had done even better at the squats before, and that she regularly hit 120 reps.
Wow.
With her body weight for deadlifts, that she had done many times before. And then 120, she knew she could easily do.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because Rebecca Klopp won the last Bros vs. Bros in Connecticut, the one we held at Derek Poundstone's gym at Poundstone's Performance Center. She kind of showed up at the last minute. She really hadn't practiced for it, and she wasn't that impressive to me. She just kind of squeaked out a win, and I didn't think that much of it. When she told me she was going to be flying out to Phoenix to contest this one, I said, this girl must be practicing. I didn't know what she was capable of. When I heard that she deadlifted 156 reps with her body weight?
Right. She has been practicing, Dave. I think she's been steady practicing.
That's incredible. That's absolutely insane. People don't realize 156 reps with your body weight. I mean, the endurance aspect alone, Aaron, is crazy.
Okay. Yeah, it really is. It really is crazy. I was actually thinking about, me and PJ were talking off camera, if me and him could do 120 pounds, or should we say 125, I think, for 156 reps. Because, you know, it's when you get to that kind of number, that's something that you can't even almost fathom, you know? And you know what? The truth is, she started looking like she was in pain at around 75. So by the time she got to that 120 limit, she looked like, I just couldn't believe she was continuing to go. And I guess it makes sense that she knew that her limit was well past 120, because when we were watching her, it looked to me like she was going to keel over at any point, and she just kept pushing and pushing and pushing.
And the truth is, she really didn't even need to do that many, because she was so far ahead of everyone, but I guess she wanted to put it away.
She said that's what I asked her after, because she could even talk after, and the other girls were like, done. She took about 25 seconds to rest, and then she was talking pretty much no problem. I mean, it's obviously that she was conditioned for this specifically. And I asked her, I said, why did you do so many? Like, because the last girl got 100, which blew me away. Rose, the competitor before her, got 100. And I thought that was unbelievable. So I figured, you know, why would you go past like 110? You know what I mean? Like 110 seems, you know, unbeatable. But she said she just wanted to make sure that she was way, way past everybody else.
Well, because Barbell still had to go, you know, and she was probably afraid of her, I'm sure.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that she could, you know how they say, like with Phil Heath or somebody, like, it's hard to imagine anybody beating. It's very hard to imagine anybody beating Rebecca at this point. I can't imagine anybody coming in and doing more than her, because I think that she had more. If she had to, I think she could have pumped out 10 or 15 more.
More impressive might have been that she squatted 75 reps with her body weight, which is really tough, because you have to support that on your back. At least with the deadlift, you kind of can, it's not quite laying on your back, you know, on your spine the whole time. So,
absolutely. No, that's for sure. Look, if maybe I could do, or maybe you could do 120 pounds, which is obviously way less than our body weight for deadlifts, I think it's almost certain that very few people could squat, you know, a plate for 75 reps.
I'm going to be honest. I don't think many people out there could deadlift their body, not even holding a bar for 156 reps, without fagging out, because that's how tough it is. I don't think many people could squat their body weight, not even with anything on their back, just their body weight in the squat position for 75 reps. You'd probably pass out before you did it, because you have the lactic acid.
You're probably right. It would be very tough. It's such a foreign thing to do, anything for that kind of reps, your body weight for any kind of reps like that, that it's hard to even imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, she is definitely a warrior, that's for sure.
Well, Sean Demarinas won the one rep max with a 705-pound deadlift, which didn't seem that impressive, but he was the best guy there. You know, you got to deal with what's there, and I think that's important. And he beat a pretty good crew of powerlifters that was there, and it was a long day too. We usually do this one after the other after the other. You guys had to wait around right until the stage cleared, because they had other events going on there.
You're gonna see the video, and I'm sure you know. We'll take in consideration that I wasn't feeling well, but by the end of the day, because we started at we got there at 11 in the morning, and we didn't finish that last event till 8 o'clock at night, or right around there. Like, you know, I started out with a suit and tie and all looking nice and sweating. By the end of that event, I had like no tie, shirt half untucked, you know, look a mess. And we ended up getting through it, but I'm sure my commentary towards the end was a lot looser too. But we ended up getting through it, and it was a very, 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 very long day. But it was an exciting event, and I think people, when they watch it on video, are going to get a real kick out of this, especially if you've seen the other ones, because this is very different than,
than
all
the
other
ones.
Yeah,
I can't wait to watch it. I know Sally's mailing me the video so that Pete the intern can edit it, but I'm looking forward to it. I want to also thank Sean Padgett from Envision Medical for stepping up and giving away some cash prizes to the winners. I know Iron Mag Labs also stepped up and gave out some great stuff.
$2,000 came out.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That was very nice of Mike DiMaggio to do that. So thanks for that.
Rob DiMaggio.
Mike DiMaggio is my lawyer. I just got off the phone with him. I got lawyers on the brain. Asta Gain, of course, was there giving away some certificates. GiftsToGain.com website. Prescription Nutrition put up money for the Run One Rep Max. Thanks for that. And of course, thank you to Ed and Betty Pariso, because without them, we couldn't have the event at all. And I hope they're doing this again next year. Have you talked to them about any of this? If this is going to continue the Europa?
I haven't, Dave, but I think that it's definitely worth talking to them about bringing this to all the Europas, because I know that Ed and Betty both watched a lot of the event. They were in the front row for a lot of the event. They told me after the fact that they thought it was great. And then Betty even came up and handed out some of the awards at the end and told me that we did a great job. So I would love to see this at all the Europas. You know, they have four Europas now. So this would be great to be on the main stage at all of them.
Absolutely. Well, Ed and Betty Pariso, thank you very much once again for a great event, and looking forward to doing this once again. Of course, Rebecca Klopp goes home $1,000 richer, and Derek Farnsworth and Frank Nesdoba split $1,000 each since they tied. Aaron, let's talk a little bit about Fort Lauderdale Cup, which is where you were actually supposed to be if I would have been at the Bros vs. Pros. Dan Ray was out there shooting. We got some great pictures up on the site. Check out the contest gallery on RX Muscle for all the pictures. I see that Oksana Grishina won the fitness event there, the pro fitness. Sister Nino finished second, and Regina De Silva in third. Aaron, what I really am more interested in, I think this is a foregone conclusion that she was going to win here in Fort Lauderdale. But you were in Spain the week before at the Arnold Europe, and Oksana did what some people thought was the impossible. Not me, because I actually predicted it would happen. She defeated seven times Ms. Olympia Fitness, Adela Garcia. Talk to me about what went on in Spain when that happened.
I listened to the show. I listened to the show with you and Chris in the airplane, where Morgan had to actually correct Chris that I was shocked by the results. And the reason why I was shocked was because, as you were actually correct, Dave, you clarified this to Chris after the fact, not because Oksana didn't deserve it, or that her routine wasn't as good or her physique wasn't as good, but because you generally do not see an Olympia, a Miss Olympia, a Mr. Olympia champion beat a week or a few weeks or even at any show other than the Olympia. You know, it just really does not happen. And when you got somebody like Adela, who is a seven-time Miss Olympia, who has built a legacy for herself and almost a legend, she just doesn't generally get beat anywhere other than the Olympia. And I had a feeling that if things kept going the way that they were, next year maybe Oksana had a very good chance of taking over the title and making sure that that, you know, she is the new Miss Olympia going into the future. But I didn't think that it would happen in at the Arnold Europe, and I don't think that Adela thought that it would happen. I think nobody did.
Well, you know, you and you know that I went on record being very bold at the Olympia. I even told Adela I predicted that she would not win the Olympia. I said that Oksana Grishina is the heir apparent. I thought she probably should have won the Arnold. I said she's going to win the Olympia. She came in by her own admission too soft. Someone had advised her to come in a little softer. I like her when she's harder because her symmetry base looks smaller. She still took second at the Olympia without even being in the top five call out in the physique round, which just goes to tell you how high her physique round her routine must have been scored. She comes back, obviously, to the Arnold Europe with a much tighter physique. The judges must have given her a much higher physique score. I don't know if she got first or seconds, but it was high enough that when combined with 75% of her routine, she defeated Adela Garcia. I don't think that she will ever lose to Adela again. I'm being that bold and going on record. What do you think about that statement?
You know, I agree with the statement. I want to say that from my ear to the grindstone, I know that a lot of people are very upset with the results in Spain. and that they had no American judges there, and that that a lot of people are not happy about these kind of changes happening. Mm-hmm. Like that, you know, almost like a takeover, I think some people feel.
Well, Ronnie Coleman in 2002 lost, after winning the Olympia, he lost to, what's his name, Günther Schlierkamp at the GNC Show of Champions, which a lot of people thought was very, controversial. But he came back the following year and looked unbelievable. So, you know, can Adela come back and redeem herself? I think
he never did the show of strength again, did he?
No, not again, not at all. But
I think that you may see the Arnold Europe, unless they have an American judge, you may see a lot of athletes missing from that show next year.
You know, I don't, but you know what? I have to say, I don't think it was a bad decision. Do you think it was a bad decision? You were at the show, you saw them in person. Was it a bad decision?
There were a lot of bad decisions at that show.
Was that a bad decision?
That particular decision was not a bad decision.
Okay, all right, good. That's all I wanted to know. All right, so Oksana Grishina comes into Fort Lauderdale, I guess figuring she's on like the Sean Roden role now. She scoops up another title there. Bethany Sisternino, who I gotta be honest, I was looking at the pictures. I don't know if you saw them. What a great physique this girl's got. She looks so much different than she did a couple years ago. She looks like she added about 5-6 pounds of muscle. Did you notice that?
You know what I did notice is I noticed that she got boobs.
That's what I'm noticing then. Yeah. They're not big.
I don't hope I'm not giving away any secrets, or I'm not going to get in trouble for saying that. But they're not big or anything. But there are boobs there that were not there before.
Right. Maybe it's balancing her physique a little better.
Yeah, it does. And there's definitely. Look, I looked at her physique, and no one told me she got them or anybody told me. But I looked at her physique, and I was like, man, something is different.
Yeah.
And I looked, and I looked, and I looked, and I was like, oh, that's what it is.
Well, it must have been tough.
There's something there that wasn't before.
It must have been tough because Bethany was in Fort Lauderdale. Guy was in competing at the British Grand Prix there. So
in British Grand Prix.
Yeah, so they were split up. Now, in the figure division, Candace Lewis, who I thought actually probably should have been higher at the Olympia than she was. I really love the girl's physique. She seems to dominate this event here, gets her first place picks. Is this a future star? Do you think, I think that she could be maybe even a top three Olympian. Do you think that next year might be her year to break through?
Well, if you look, Candace Lewis's condition has become progressively and progressively better. She was always a great shape, who was always a little bit soft, you know? I mean, you could look at her and be like, wow, she's got great structure, great muscle bellies, but she just seemed like she just never really dieted. Like, she almost looked like somebody who just genetically looked like that. Mm-hmm. And she started to now have abs. She's got, like, a little bit of definition everywhere.
Right.
I'm not seeing the softness that I used to see. And it looks to be paying off for her. She beat a very good Kim Lamacco. Who I'm super impressed with, who from the back I think is as good as Aaron Stern or anybody, any athlete, any figure girl
waist
we've ever had.
Yeah, tiny
from the back.
She could be a little tighter. She could be a little tighter. She could be a little tighter. Yeah, I think all around she could be a little tighter. Kamala Macko is actually Philip Michael Thomas's stepdaughter from Miami Vice. I think she's made some tremendous gains and improvements since her USA showing where she won her class there and got her pro card. But I still think that she's got to just get her conditioning down a little better. But I think her structurally, like you said, I think that's what you're talking about. Structurally, she's definitely a top Olympian competitor, top six for sure. Probably the biggest surprise, Aaron, was Kamala Rodriguez. Who usually we see in the fitness realms did figure, and she plays top three. She comes in third here. Why do you think she did that?
Why she did that. I talked to JM and I asked him why she did it, and he said that that was the suggestion of the judges at the Olympia. He said her fitness routine doesn't pop anymore, and that she always does better in the physique round. And she decided she would try one more time in Spain. She did not. Her routine still was put pretty far down there.
Yeah.
So basically, I guess she talked to her manager, JM, and they decided, you know what, they're going to go with what the judges suggest. And we are going to be seeing her in figure from now on.
Mm. I'd like to see her in women's physique, to be honest with you.
Maybe that's the next move. I mean, yeah. I could definitely see a slightly more muscular Kamala Rodriguez doing that. I think she looked. I mean, if you look at her physique does look great. So
she could definitely.
You
know,
and her routine is, if you remember, her routines are very, very dancey. You know, she is a great dancer. Not a lot of gymnastics background. Not a lot of strength moves. So if that's what they're leaning to, if Oksana Grishina is the new It Girl, then Kamala is pretty far off from Oksana.
I think I'm going to predict Kamala Rodriguez will go to women's physique. I think that that's a better fit for her. And Bikini, Yashera Robles wins another show. What is this, her like second or third win of the season?
She's won a few. She's been on a roll.
She's from Brooklyn, yeah, or Bronx, New York, or something like that. She won the Valencia Cup.
That's what I was going to say. She won. I covered that show. I remember she won the Valenti Cup. Mm-hmm. She has done very, very well for herself. You know, that's the girlfriend of a 212 competitor,
Marco Rivera.
Right? Marco Rivera, a New York guy. They're both compete from New York.
She was third in Pittsburgh. She was third at the New York Pro, third at the Toronto show. And then she won the Valenti Cup there. So impressive. Very impressive. It's amazing how people rise so quickly, and they like her. Lacey DeLuca second. And then I don't know. How do you pronounce this girl's name? Gigi? Gigi Amora?
Gigi. Yeah. Gigi Amaro, yeah.
Yeah, she was third. No,
I'm not familiar with her, really.
Very cute girl. Very, very cute girl. And I think she'll probably go far, too. So I see Shannon Day and Rob had a really good show down there. It's amazing. We covered 10 shows this past weekend, Aaron, and there was a lot of pro shows. The Big Sexy, I was talking a little earlier with Chris, covered the IFBB Titans Women's Physique Pro Show out in California there. Obviously,
what an exciting show for Lewis. Lewis wins, his girlfriend, Sabrina Taylor, wins not only the best poser, but wins her first time winning a pro show. His client, Terry, wins the overall in men's physique, and he covers the show for RX Muscle for the first time ever. Pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, I called him. Show. I said, you dope. You got the winner of the show sleeping in the bed next to you, and I have no posing footage of her. What's wrong with that picture? I said,
he's got no posing footage of her.
No, he forgot. They were so excited, the two of them, he forgot to make her do the poses for me. But congratulations to Sabrina Taylor, and of course, Lewis, thanks for doing a great job out there in California. While Aaron Jabaka Singerman was in Phoenix and Dan Ray was in Florida, we were all over the world. And who the hell knows? Chris Aceto was in England with Barry Stalker and Pierre Lamley. So we were all over the world covering shows. And you know what the great thing was? I was home in my bed the whole time. And I just can't be more proud of the coverage that we had. So I want to thank you for that. Now, Aaron, you're going to be leaving for Prague, like you said, this Wednesday for the Prague show. Sean Roden will be trying to make it a hat trick in as many weeks, three in a row. That would be 5 wins for the year. He looks to be the favorite going into this show. Aaron, have you heard any hype on or any gossip on anyone else who will be entering this event?
No, not really. I mean, I know that there's going to be a lot of guys at the show. I mean, you're going to see a lot of the same faces. Ruly Winkler will be back. I know Tony Freeman's going to make another shot at it. Robert Petrakowicz again. Basically, all the top 5 is going to be back. Minus, I don't think Dennis Wolf is making the trip. So I don't see anybody. I don't see anybody standing up to really give Sean much of a run for his money, honestly. I don't think we're going to see any new people coming out of the woodwork, new top competitors. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, my friend Terry sent you a list of all the places to go to in Prague.
Yes,
so.
That was a very nice list. Very nice. He sent us a great list and some interesting information. And I'll definitely have more questions for him. I hear so many cool things about Prague. I want to make sure it's tough, you know, without you there and without somebody like helping us specifically to be around with the camera. It's hard to get the kind of like sightseeing travel footage that I like.
Bring the travel shows. Bring the Technitron, Chris Aceto, which that's his new name now. Did you know that? The Technitron?
The Technitron?
Yeah, like Flexitron, only he's instead of the technician, he's the Technitron now.
I get it, the Technitron.
Well, that's Aaron, funny. I can't thank you enough for picking up the slack. I'm going to try to make it to the NPC Nationals. That's my goal at this point. I don't know if I will. I will definitely certainly make it out to the Masters Mr. Olympia with you in South Beach in December. And, of course, we have a Bros versus Pros 13 going to be taking place at Diamond Gym here in December. That will be in honor of the late John Kemper. I know you got a lot of packing to do.
What's the date for that? What's the John Kemper date?
That is going to be the third weekend in December, which would be the weekend after the... so I guess that would be the weekend of the 15th of December.
Are we gonna do the January special RX Muscle deal that we talked about?
I don't know what deal that is. We have.
Remember the camp.
Yeah, but we will talk about that. I don't want to talk about that yet, but we will definitely have. We're having a Christmas party, so we're going to have the RX Muscle Christmas party that weekend. We'll have an RX Muscle Heavy Muscle TV show. We'll all be on, and then we'll have the Bros vs. Pros that Saturday at Diamond Gym in New Jersey. So that we'll talk about that as we get closer. We still have so much going on in the world of bodybuilding. Also, stay tuned after the commercial break. I have the one and only WWE superstar and now MMA fighter, Dave the Animal Batista. Great interview. I think people are going to really like it. You know, you and I bumped into him in a restaurant in Tampa, Florida. We were talking with him a little bit. I had met him before and gave me his number. And he's got a lot going on. Some big movies coming out with Vin Diesel and some mixed martial arts movies. So he's got a lot to talk about. Aaron, have a great trip. I'm jealous once again. We'll see you when you get back from Prague, Czech Republic.
All right, Dave, I'll have another report for you then. And then after that, I'll be able to go back to normal life and we'll be back to doing this every week.
Ask
with
Dave.
The question to the Ask Dave portion. And Access Bodybuilding will be back and life will be back
to normal.
On a slower speed.
That's right. All right, we're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, Dave Batista.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RxMuscle.com. Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements. HouseOfPain.com. The biggest and strongest people in the world wear House of Pain clothing. House of Pain fighters hit harder, and House of Pain lifters are stronger. Put some attitude in your next workout with House of Pain. Check out the latest House of Pain gear at HouseOfPain.com or call 1-888-463-7246. That's 1-888-463-7246. Unleash your inner beast with House of Pain clothing. Visit HouseOfPain.com. Paying inflated prices for products which are full of hype and fillers? At Bulk Nutrients, you get the purest products available direct from our factory. There are no middlemen, contractors, distributors, or shop fronts. Bulk Nutrients stocks protein, carbs, aminos, pre-workout recovery, encapsulated products, fat burners, test boosters, and so much more. Bulk Nutrients is 100% Australian-owned and operated, and will give you higher quality and better prices guaranteed. So visit bulknutrients.com.au. It's your one-stop shop.
Who are the Iron Sirens? The heroes. Susie Curry. Adela Garcia. Jenny Lynn. Crystal Richardson. Who are the Dark Divas? Gina Aliotti as Diva X. Jen Gates as Shade. Liza Kamstra as Black Lotus. Sonia Gonzalez as Raptress. And their story is told only in Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens is a one-of-a-kind limited edition comic book series and is the brainchild of J.M. Mannion. Order your copy of Iron Sirens today before they're gone. Visit IronSirensComics.com. That's IronSirensComics.com to get your copy of Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens. Iron
Sirens. Are you looking for some of the most groundbreaking, highest quality nutritional supplements on the market? Then look no further than BioFlex Nutrition. 100% Australian owned and direct from the manufacturer. You'll get some of the most pure and affordable supplements offered today. Better yet, with no proprietary blends or fillers, and by including only the best ingredients, we proudly bring to the market Australia's purest range of supplements. Find us online at bioflexnutrition.com.au. BioFlex Nutrition, Australia's purest supplements. That's BioFlex, ready to go.
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. exercise, up-to-the-minute news, and more. Visit the RXMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RXMuscle.com. Heavy
Muscle Radio. Our next guest is no stranger to both the bodybuilding realm, the WWE wrestling realm, and now the MMA realm. I've been trying to get him on the show before. One of the true gentlemen of the sport, all three sports, that is, Dave the Animal Batista.
Hey, man. What's going on, Dave? Thanks for the intro.
Yeah. You know, we ran into each other in Tampa this summer, and I'd always wanted to, I've seen you at bodybuilding shows, I've seen you in wrestling events, and I've always wanted to get you on the radio and talk to you, and I know now that you kind of like switched careers into more of an MMA type of realm, and now that you opened your own gym, I thought this was a good downtime to get you and to find out what you've been doing, because you kind of have a pretty long career. Once you write a book about yourself, you're kind of in that realm of like you have something to talk about.
Right. And the book was, I think 4 or 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting. I've had a journey for sure. You're probably actually not making a career out of MMA though.
No.
It's kind of it's a hobby thing, but you know, I just enjoy doing it.
I always find that it, you know, usually guys come from MMA into wrestling. You kind of went the opposite direction.
Right.
You know, before we get into like what happened, but you know, give me a little bit of a, because you were kind of the same age. I think I'm a year older than you. What are you, 43 now?
43, yeah. Yeah.
You started in the bodybuilding realm, and obviously for a bodybuilder, you were probably a little tall. How did that all come about? Number one, first of all, before you get to that, a lot of people ask me, what ethnicity are you?
I'm half Filipino and half Greek. Yeah, nobody can ever figure it out.
What a combination.
Right. But I actually got into bodybuilding through amateur wrestling. I started lifting weights when I was wrestling in high school. Mm-hmm. And my first job out of high school was at a gym called Olympus Gym in Northern Virginia. And kind of became obsessed with it, man. You know, because up until I started lifting weights, I was always muscular, but I was just long and lanky.
Right.
But when I started lifting weights, I mean, I started filling out like crazy.
Were you one of these guys that like you got into bodybuilding and you loved it so much that you stopped doing every other sport you were involved with?
I stopped doing everything, man. It's like I had no life outside of the gym. Everything revolved around being in the gym, and it's weird, man, because you know, I only competed because I thought that's what you did, you know, and everybody around me was competing, and I, you know, just loved being in the gym so much. It was like you train, then you diet, then you compete, but I never really liked competing. You know, I didn't adapt to it well. I didn't like dieting. I didn't particularly like being on stage, but I did it because everybody else was doing it. I thought that's just what you did.
What year was that you actually got into the bodybuilding? Do you remember?
My first show was in, I want to say, 1988 as a teenager.
Wow, that is
teen. It was like the team Virginia State.
And
I had
do?
Not been lifting weights very long. I had kind of lifted. I was just already muscular from, you know, wrestling and everything, but that was my first.
Were you 6 foot six back then?
I was actually a little bit shorter. But, I was pretty much full grown. It was weird, man, because I grew in high school. I just grew tall so fast, but I was just so long and lanky and not filled out.
Were you
back then I was pretty tall.
Were you a popular kid in high school, would you say?
I guess so. You know, I was a little antisocial when I was in high school. I was very much an introvert and just always real shy, you know.
That's why
my buddies that, you know, were on the wrestling team, and those were the guys I was close to, and I still am close to them to this day.
That's interesting. Did you find that you moved away from them and you moved back towards them as you got a little older?
No, I just kind of never lost touch, you know.
Which is unusual, because usually, you know, you kind of get involved with the people that you're working with, you know.
Yeah, no, I was always, it's weird because, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, they forget that I really didn't really get into wrestling until I was, you know, in my 30s.
You were a late bloomer.
Yeah, I was such a late bloomer. You know, story of my life.
How did you get discovered with WWE?
I just pursued it. You know, I was up in Minneapolis at the time. Which is still pursuing, you know, powerlifting a little bit and a little bodybuilding, just trying to fill out. And there were some wrestlers that trained in the gym that I was at, which is the gym in Plymouth, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And they were at that time they were having open tryouts for WCW, And I was, you know, by then I had two kids, and I was, I mean, flat busted broke.
I was going to say that.
You know, so I, yeah, because I wasn't even bouncing anymore. I was just kind of working at gyms here and there. So I was broke, so I actually went, and because I wanted to make some money for a tryout at WCW, and it went really bad.
Oh, you went bad for you, huh?
Oh, it went really bad. He actually kicked me out and told me not to ever come back, and I'd never be a pro wrestler.
What was your problem? You didn't have the mouthpiece on you at the time?
No, you know, it wasn't even that, because we were just going through the physical drills, but I think, you know, I don't know, man. They just ran me into the ground that time. I was, like, excessively big, and I just, you know, didn't have the cardio for it, and wasn't very agile.
What was the biggest you had gotten to?
Like 370.
What? You were that big?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Were you fat?
No, not at all. I was just, you know, just bloated as hell and just big. I looked like a great big power lifter. You know, I wasn't a fatty by any means. So,
you were like going for the big show look almost, you know?
I was just trying to fill out, really. You know, it's just like my frame was so long, and I just, you know, I spent years just trying to put weight on and fill out. And it was weird because even when I was that heavy, I still didn't feel like I was big. I guess I had that reverse anorexia.
You had the anorexia, thing going on. What was the biggest you ever competed on stage at?
Oh man, not heavy, like 270, something like that.
That's pretty big. And
yeah,
what was
for my frame, I just looked lanky, man. I was standing next to guys who are, you know, 5'10", 230, and they looked huge compared to me. You know, I just looked long and lanky.
What shows did you ever compete against anyone that went on to become a very good bodybuilder?
No, not that I can think of. Not big names anyway.
Did you ever like do well at a show, or was it always like, oh, his legs are too small, or you know?
No, the only show I ever did well at, honestly, was the first one that I ever did. You know, it was at the teen division.
Right.
Other than that, I was, you know, placed around fifth or sixth.
Mm. Was that frustrating for you?
Very frustrating, because I really did. I mean, you know, I thought I would do better, and I spent so much time, you know, and effort on it. And that was when I realized that, man, bodybuilding is just a hard life, man. It's a hard, you know, no thank you. And it's just a hard life. You just don't make any money. Spend all this money for contest prep, and I mean, what a hard life.
This is important, because there's a lot of guys out there. I know a lot of guys are trying to get into wrestling. There's a lot of guys trying to get into bodybuilding, and they hear, you know, they think everything comes easy. And here you are.
God.
You wanted to be a bodybuilder. You weren't successful at it. Right. You tried to get into wrestling. They told you don't bother coming back.
Right.
I'm sure your family was telling you, what the hell are you doing? Get yourself a real job.
Right. And I was, you know, that's one of those things that I just couldn't do it, man. I just, you know, I didn't want to give up on it. Once I really found wrestling, it was the same with bodybuilding. I got obsessed with it. You know, I just fell in love with it. You know, I just really wanted to do it. So I, you know, after the thing at WCW went wrong, I went and I paid somebody to teach me how to wrestle. And that's how I got into it.
Who was the guy to show you the ropes?
Afa the Wild Samoan. Afa and Sika the Wild Samoans, but Afa taught me how to wrestle. Yeah.
And when you go to these wrestling schools or you hire someone like that, do these guys have like connections to like get you tryouts after the?
Yeah, it was. I was there for about a year, and Afa actually called Vince McMahon, said you got to take a look at this guy.
And
you know, so he sent me up there.
Do you remember the first time you met McMahon?
Yeah, it was actually. It was at. I think it was at the first show that I actually did, and I'd been to a bunch of shows, but never got to meet Vince. But I think it was at the first show that I ever actually took part in, which would have been 2002. Mm-hmm. So I think I worked for him for years without actually ever
meeting. Did? So who signed you? Who was responsible for actually signing you?
At the time, there was a guy named Bruce Pritchard, who was head of talent relations. And you may remember him. If you're a wrestling fan, you remember Brother Love.
Yes.
Then that's Bruce Pritchard.
That's funny.
And I'll never forget, because I was there for a trial, and he was walking by the ring. And I saw him literally walk. He looked at the ring. He looked away. Then he stopped, took a step back, and looked back at the ring, looked at me, and he said that he remembered seeing me for the first time because he thought I was Goldberg.
You know,
I was cool.
Anything like? Were you still big at that time?
I think it was just because I was, you know.
When did you get the persona of the ripped bodybuilder? Because, I mean, that's really what people remember you as, that shredded, you know.
I really started trimming down after I got a couple bad injuries when I, you know, made up to WWE. And that's when I realized I also was, you know, they started to put me in bigger matches that went on, you know, longer than 15, 20, 30 minute matches. And I just, I mean, you know, just consistently kept trimming down and trying to get in better, you know, shape, more athletic shape. And I wanted more of an athletic build. You know, I didn't want to be so, you know, so muscle bound. I wanted to be more agile.
Do Did you find that you were more marketable as that started happening?
You know, it's weird, man. I never thought about it, but people started to react to me differently. So it must have been, you know, it must have been. I just became more marketable.
I mean, you have one of these looks that when people see you, I'm sure anywhere you go, they know, instantly know who you are. You can't blend into the crowd.
Yeah, it's funny. It still happens, but I always think, you know, because now I feel more, you know, average than I have in years, and I still get, you know, people still think I'm big. I dropped like 20 pounds since I left wrestling. But when I, you know, the funny thing is when I drop down to 265, and I've gotten remarks from wrestling fans, like they've seen pictures of me at 265, and, you know, I've gotten comments like, I hope he's not sick. Like, are you kidding? Are you kidding? It's not like I'm anorexic.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, they say that about me, too. They're like, I went from being, they used to think I was a wrestler when I was like 300 pounds.
Right.
Then I really trimmed down to about 250, and they still thought I looked like a bodybuilder. And
that's
now
so
they're telling me MMA fighter, you know.
I remember seeing you live for the first time on stage at the Junior Nationals they had in Washington, D.C.
Wow, 95.
Being like, yeah. Oh my God, look at this freak. It was like, I'll never forget it.
It was a long
never
time.
Forget
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah. That was the first, like, I think when I really first got freaky big,
uh-huh.
It's like 258
yeah.
or something like that.
That was
but
great.
It's a good show. Talk to me a little bit about how you break out of the Mr. Introvert into being the guy who's got the biggest mouth at the microphone, because that's got to be tough for you to do, especially not being like
God.
That naturally.
It was. And you wouldn't believe like the anxiety attacks that I used to have when, you know, they tell me I had to go out and speak. I mean, it was absolutely brutal.
How do you get over
but
that?
I don't know. It's just one of those things that I kind of just got accustomed to it, you know? So, I don't know. It just kind of grew on me.
I always wondered, do you guys, like, when you're at home alone, do you, like, yell at the mirror? Do you, like, practice like that?
You know, he used to always tell me to do that, and I could never do it because I just felt so stupid doing it. I just couldn't do it, you know?
No one sees you, though.
Right. I just, you know, I don't know. I don't like to see my, I was embarrassed, you know? So I just couldn't do it. I don't know. I've never been able to do stuff like that.
Now you have a million nicknames. Who gave you, which nickname do you like the best?
Well, I guess the animal kind of stuck with me. Yeah, animal stuck with me, and that was, you know, Jim Ross, who dubbed me the animal.
Mm-hmm.
He said, because I wasn't a very technical wrestler, and he used to just say I mauled people like an animal.
Like so Wolverine.
Right.
Now, You wrestled some very big matches, obviously. You wrestled all the greatest wrestlers of
right.
the time when you were in there. What would you say was the most the fun match that you've ever had?
You know, probably the most fun I've actually had in the ring would have been with Rey Mysterio. Rey and Eddie Guerrero by far.
Why?
Just because they're just so easy to work with, and they were so entertaining. You know, it's like one of those things, you just in there and you just have fun, you know?
Was there guys that you work with that you were like, you know what? I hate working with this guy. What a pain in the ass.
There were a few, you know, I don't want to talk about, you know, Kali, the great Kali. I just had such a rough time working with him.
Well,
and he also, you know, he wasn't very cooperative, you know, he didn't really want to do anything. Just kind of clumsy. He'd always hurt me and, you know, I just couldn't do much with him. It just didn't make for very good chemistry.
Is that dangerous? I mean, I imagine it's dangerous if you don't trust the person you're working with, right?
It can get a little rough, yeah. And I try to, you know, I've gotten hurt, like, extremely bad by putting trust in people. So later in my career, you know, I kind of, you know, if I didn't want to do something, didn't feel comfortable with somebody, I had no problem saying, hell no.
What was the worst that you've ever got injured in the ring?
Probably I got hurt really bad with Mark Henry, and that was one of those things. I love Mark to death, man. Mark and I are friends, And so, you know, it's not like a personal attack on him, but, you know, I trust him. I gave him my body, and he hurt me really, really bad.
What'd he do?
He did this thing. He used to do this move called Chocolate Moose, where he would lay, like, guys over the ropes.
Yeah.
And he'd jump on him, but he'd, like, slide through the ropes.
Right.
But with me, and he never told me he was going to do it. He just put me over the ropes, and he said, stay there. The next thing I know is all 400 pounds of Mark Henry, you know, squishing me on the mat. I don't even know what happened. I ended up looking at the ceiling outside of the ring, and I couldn't breathe.
Wow.
And all I was concerned about was trying to catch my breath. And then I got up, and I realized my arm was flapping around because my tricep had exploded.
No, you tore your tricep?
Yeah, I mean, shredded it. They had to take a piece of my hamstring out to weave it in to, you know, create a new tricep for me.
Wow, that bad, huh?
I know, it's one of those things I just never saw coming. Never saw it coming.
What was the recovery on that injury?
God, about 6 months.
People don't realize. I mean, you know, I think Triple H once said, is it worse? Because always people always ask, is it real what you guys do? And Triple H always says, is it worse knowing you're going to get hit or not knowing you're going to get hit?
You know? Right, right. That was, you know, it was one of the things that I was like, because when I told my mom I wanted to fight and she was scared to death, I was like, Mom, are you kidding me? I've been an inch away from breaking my neck, you know, every night for the last 10 years. I said, I've been volunteering myself to get beat up. At least I can try to defend myself in a fighting. Right. You know?
Now, we're going to segue into that in a minute. Now, it's interesting because I see that The Rock, you know, has been made it very big in Hollywood. And right. I'm waiting for you to make it in Hollywood because I think you're an action star waiting to happen. But
I appreciate it.
You know, The Rock has been coming back and doing wrestling events, and it seems like he kind of misses it a little bit. What sure. made you move away from wrestling? People think you're at top of your game. Right. You're one of the most popular wrestlers, you know, and then you just left.
It, you know, and it's really weird, and it's really good. You know, I left when I was on top, and I gave them a lot of leave, and it's really because, you know, the company just took such a weird direction for me. Because I came in, you know, at kind of the tail end of the Attitude Era, when it was still kind of edgy and, you know, you just never knew what you were going to get. It was kind of, that's what sucked me back into wrestling. Mm-hmm. And then they started taking the, you know, the PG directed show.
Right.
And it just, man, I didn't know what the hell was doing. All our tools were being taken away from us, and the rules were changing, you know, minute by minute. And so I was just kind of lost. I wasn't happy. I didn't like, you know, some of the new talent they were really giving a push to. And, you know, I see what I did it because they were directing the show a certain way, but it's like I didn't think they were the best representatives of professional wrestling. I just, you know, thought that it made it look, you know, kind of stupid and hokey, and I just didn't want to be there anymore. I wasn't proud of what I was doing anymore.
Why? You know? Yeah, why did they do that? Because I noticed that the guys I like were you, and when they were, you're right, when the Stone Cold Steve Austin,
sure, yeah,
and they kind of PG'd it up. Was that done purposely?
Totally. Yeah, it was. I mean, I think, you know, I think the, yeah, I don't know. It's all speculation, but I think, you know, Vince really wanted to, you know, just have that credibility. You know, as a regular, you know, normal mainstream society. You know, he wanted to bring back in the, you know, the regular sponsors, the great, you know, the big sponsors. He wanted to make sure, you know, kept Walmart happy and all the guys that, you know, all the companies that were really, you know, family oriented, you know. So, you know, and I totally get it. You know, I get it. And that's why I never badmouthed the decision that, you know, or the route that you took, but it just, I didn't agree with it personally, so that's how I protested. I left.
Now, you left at age 40. Now, you know, people could also say, well, you know, maybe you were smart because, I mean, what I found, you know, because I just tore my quad slipping on a staircase in India, of all places. I don't know if you heard about that.
I didn't hear, but man. Yeah.
What I find that is I'm not as resilient as I was when I was in my 20s and 30s. Right. Were you? Did that concern you that, hey, you know, I could wind up getting paralyzed or something like that?
You know what's weird is it's actually the opposite for me, because I found that the more, you know, the older I got, the more I started taking care of myself, the more I started, you know, doing, you know, more cardio stuff and more stretching and, you know, less weightlifting, especially less heavy lifting. I got in better shape and I moved better and I was more flexible, more athletic. Yeah, so it's kind of weird how that happened. Like, I felt like my last year physically, I felt the best. I mean, I felt the best that I did through my whole career.
Mm.
It was kind of a bad coincidence. In my last match, I broke my back. But it was,
did you really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I broke
you
my back.
Did?
I had a compression fracture in my L1, and it was really because of the stunt we did. We did a really crazy stunt, and it didn't work out very good.
But you were leaving anyway. When are, you know?
I was leaving. That's, you know, and the next day I came out in a wheelchair.
Wow.
And cut this major promo but I literally went from the hospital to the show, got in a wheelchair, and they wheeled me down, and I did my thing, and that was my last night there.
Wow. And then what happened? Did they repair your back?
I rested on it for a while. It was just a compression fracture, so I got over it. I had bad side effects from it. Gave me scoliosis, my disc, and so I had to actually went in about a year later for surgery because I put it off as long as I could.
Of course.
But it got to the point where, you know, my leg was consistently going numb on me, constantly. So I had it fixed. No, I mean, I feel great.
Now, all right, so you get over the wrestling, you move on to something else. I'm sure, I'm hoping that you probably saved a few bucks for yourself, so it's not like you're not a poor guy. And how did you get bit by the MMA bug?
You know, it's weird. I left wrestling thinking that I was going to go straight into fighting because I kind of, you know, I had that idea that I wanted to leave, and I was kind of, yeah, I really was. I was such a fan, and I was really inspired by Brock and Bobby going into MMA, and thought, man, I'd really like to give this a shot. So when I got left wrestling, I, you know, hooked up with Cesar Gracie and went out there and started training some out there, and that's kind of how I got the bug. That's where I start. Got my start with Cesar.
Are you one of these guys, though, Dave, that you just have to be doing something extreme all the time? You always have to find like a new something that's going to, like, you know, float your boat, get you, you know.
I think so, man. I think you know, it keeps me young. You know, I you know, I don't know, man. I just find things that I just kind of fall in love with, and I really want to do. But you know, like I said, I really think that's what keeps me young. You know, keeps me, you know, it's quality of life, man. If you do stuff, doing stuff you love. Especially if you're getting paid for doing stuff you love. I mean, it doesn't get any better. Sure. Yeah.
Do you find that since you were a very popular WWE wrestler, that you have more opportunities to make money in the MMA arena?
Oh, for sure. I wouldn't have a shot in hell if I wasn't in, you know, WWE name. Hmm. I mean, not a shot in hell. You know, because I don't, I mean, for one, I'm because of my age, and then, you know, I don't have any experience. I mean, I might not have even gotten sanctioned to fight, you know, if they didn't know that I had already been in the WWE for 10 years.
You just had your first fight. You won it. You were supposed to have a fight with a guy who was really good. And what happened to that fight? Because you wound up taking a fight with another guy in a week's notice, and a lot of people were complaining the fact that the guy wasn't in shape. But
right.
Tell me what happened.
Yeah, it was just, you know, I lost my opponent the week before the fight. He was, you know, had some trouble with the law, you know, and so we got a guy named Vince Lucero. They offered me a couple other guys, but the guys they offered me were much smaller, and I didn't want to fight a guy that was smaller. So, you know, when Vince came up, you know, on paper Vince looked great. You know, this guy's had over 40 fights, 15 knockouts, like 22 wins, something like that. But had also fought like three former, you know, world champions. Mm-hmm. So on paper he looked great. When he got there, he was way overweight. Sure. I mean, he was like 50 pounds heavier than I was, which I guess why they made it an open weight class. But then he just, it is what it is. You know, it's one of the things I went through with it. Like I was obligated to do, and I beat his ass.
No, you didn't.
But you know, I was really actually really really nervous, and I didn't. I, there's two things that went wrong. One is I was really nervous. Two, I wasn't intimidated by Vince at all. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wish I had been, because I would have been protecting myself a lot more.
Right.
But I had my, you know, I just wasn't intimidated. And he clocked me a couple of good times and, I mean, dazed me pretty bad. So it wasn't really until I got pissed off, because I felt like, he thought he was winning the fight, and he started goofing around. And it kind of pissed me off. So I just took him down and just pounded him.
How different is it, I mean, when you really get hit? Does it register like, what the hell am I doing? This guy, I'm in a real fight here, you know?
Right, yeah, it, especially when you're really, really not expecting it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if nothing else, the guy has heavy, heavy hands. And that's the first time I had ever, you know, gotten hit solid with a, you know, 4-ounce glove.
Mm-hmm.
And, it knocked me goofy, because he hit me with, like, one right after another, like, two rights. It really took me a good minute and a half to recover from. I mean, really, so I wasn't cloudy.
Did you panic? I mean,
that was one of the things I never felt like, you know, I was in danger of losing the fight.
You know, a lot of guys say that, you know, MMA fighting and boxing as well becomes like something that, you know, it seems glamorous, the training is cool, and then you get in the ring and you really get rocked a couple times, and you realize this is not as easy as it seems, you know.
Right.
Have you thought about that, or do you just love the competition so much so that you're willing to deal with that?
Yeah, it just, you know, it didn't really bother me. You know, I don't even, you know, people kept asking me why I was nervous, and I really can't even answer it. I don't know why I was nervous. I just was. And there was one of my training partners, a guy named Justin McCauley, who's also a pro fighter. He was the only guy who sat me down and said, first fight, and this is what you're going to feel. He said, you're not going to feel your legs under you. You're going to, you know, start questioning, start doubting your condition. You start questioning why you're there. And I experienced every one of those emotions.
Did you really?
Yeah, every one of them. And it really wasn't, until the first, I mean, the last like 20 minutes before I was walking into the cage when I started to get nervous. Mm. And sure enough, when I was in the cage, I didn't feel my legs. I was wondering if I was going to, you know, even though looking over at this guy, you know, as I thought, there's no way. This guy's not even in shape. I've been training my ass off for 8 weeks, and this guy can't touch me. But I still went through all of those emotions, man. It was just the weirdest thing.
When the fight was over, was the thrill of victory of this MMA fight close to what you felt when you're like at WrestleMania and things like that?
No, not even close. And it was weird because this, you know, like I said, I didn't really get into this fight until I got pissed off. Mm-hmm. And after I pounded him and they stopped the fight, I was still pissed off, and I started, you know, talking smack to him while he was on the ground, and he rolled over and he kicked me in the balls.
What?
Which really pissed me off. So it was kind of gotten a little argument after the fight.
I didn't know that.
So, oh yeah, yeah. So it was kind of like, it just, you know, for me, the fight experience, just the fight itself, is very bittersweet, you know. But the training camp was, one hell of an experience.
Are MMA fighters more, how can I put this politely, off their rocker than WWE guys?
I think so. You know, I think every MMA fighter has got to just have a couple screws loose. Just got to, man. You just got to. And I think that, you know, one of my biggest downsides is I'm not really an angry person. I'm not really a violent person.
Yeah.
And I think that's something you actually need, you know, because I think it takes that, unless you can just turn it on, you know, at will. I just think you just need a little bit of that. I'm not an angry person. I'm not a violent person. I'm very, very passive.
The funny thing is, your persona in wrestling was you were the angriest guy of all time, you know.
Right.
That's the irony of the whole thing.
Yeah, and that's probably what made it fun. You know, that's what made it fun, because I got to be somebody who's really not me.
When you get into that fighting ring, however, the octagon, do you say to yourself, I got to turn on that personality that I did as a wrestler for intimidation factors?
No, you know, I really didn't think that. You know, I was really just trying to calm myself down. Mm. I don't know if... I don't really know if you need that. Mm. You know, the intimidation thing. I mean, it may help, but, you know, I don't really know. I just wish that, you know, I like to do it one more time just so I can try to correct the things that, you know, the mistakes that I made in the first one. And also fight a guy. You know, I still like to fight my original opponent if he's, you know, gets out of jail. Yeah.
So you don't see yourself doing this, you know, long term? Is this just a short term project for you?
Not at all. Yeah, not at all. I mean, I may fight once more, twice at the very most. But no, this is not a career for me. Not even close.
So if a promoter came up to you and said, "Hey, I got a big fight for you. There's a ton. I'm going to put up some. We're going to get up here." You wouldn't do it?
I wouldn't. No. You know, I'm not going to be the paycheck guy. Mm-hmm. You know. I'm doing this because I really love to do it, and I'd like to do it one more. But there's not. You know, not a promoter can come and say, "Yeah, we're going to pay you this much to fight." Mm-hmm. If I want to do it, I'll do it.
What about, would you ever do like a celebrity wrestling? You know, you get these like Joey Buttafuoco guys or like Jose Canseco. Would you ever like box one of those guys in the ring?
I don't know about boxing, but, you know, I heard there were rumors that, people wanted to set up a fight between me and Jose Canseco.
That'd be a good one.
I'd like to beat his ass.
I'd like you to beat his ass.
Yeah, because I just don't like him, man. I don't like what the guy did to his friends. And he's just, you know, a guy who's starved for, you know, publicity. I just don't like him.
I'd love to see. Man, that would be a big fight. I bet you get a million people watching.
That would be like a personal issue with me. I just think he stabbed all his friends in the back.
He absolutely did.
Yeah.
I think you should try to make that one happen. That would be interesting. How's your, you opened your own MMA gym down in Tampa. Yeah. How's that doing?
It's doing good. We're actually, you know, we're moving in with Powerhouse Gym in downtown Tampa.
Oh, I love those guys.
Yeah, so we're going to team up with Matt and move in there. And so hopefully it's really going to take off.
What's the name of your gym?
It's Gracie Fighter. It's the same flag. I opened up a gym under Caesar Gracie's flag. So it's Gracie Fighter Tampa.
Mm-hmm. And do you actually work there at all?
I'm usually there daily. If I'm home, I'm there. Yeah.
Cool.
People ask me what I do for a living. I never say that I'm a wrestler or an actor or a fighter. I always say I own a gym. I'm a gym owner.
Now, do you train daily for MMA type stuff?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm there.
And do you see yourself ever wanting to get into something? What's like the next step for you? Do you want to get into Hollywood? Do you want to get into movies? It seems like a natural progression for you.
Well, I have, you know, Man with the Iron Fist is being released November 2nd.
What's that about?
It's a kung fu movie. It's like a kung fu fantasy movie with a huge cast. Russell Crowe and Lucy Liu, RZA, Kung Lee, myself, Jamie Chung. Yeah, it's gonna be a huge movie.
You have a big part in that?
Yeah, a huge part. Yeah. I have a really badass character named called Brass Body. So that's what, you know, that's what the nickname for the fight came, Brass Body.
Now how did you get that gig?
I actually, you know, I did a martial art called Kali. I've been doing it for years. It's a Filipino martial art. And RZA, the director, and also you might remember RZA from Wu-Tang.
Sure.
If you're a Wu-Tang Clan fan. But he co-wrote it and directed the movie. And he was looking for somebody to play this Brass Body character. And he needed my type. But he didn't know I was into martial arts until he saw this video of me doing Kali. So he got in touch with my friend who got in touch with me. And I was like, no way, because I was such a big fan of Wu-Tang. So I flew out to L.A. to meet with him, and he kind of sized me up and offered me the part, and I jumped all over it.
When's that due out?
So that'll be released on November 2nd.
Oh, so that's coming up. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're going. I'm headed out to L.A. this week for the premiere.
Red carpet, huh?
Yeah, do the red carpet thing.
That should be exciting. Do you see yourself wanting to do more of these type of movies?
I did a movie with Vin Diesel earlier this year, and that'll come out early part of next year.
What's that called?
It's the second installment of Riddick. There was Pitch Black, there was Chronicles of Riddick, and this will be the second installment of Riddick. So there'll be a Riddick movie.
Gotcha. Well, actually, the third it would technically be, I guess.
Yeah, second installment.
I like both of those movies. So
yeah, Pitch Black I thought was the best, and they really this. If you love Pitch Black, you're gonna love this movie because they went back more towards the original formula with some of the Necromonger world in it, but really stayed true to the original formula.
You play a good guy or bad guy? Or we're not supposed to know that.
My characters are always the same. They're kind of good guys that just do bad things.
I think this is right. I think this is perfect for you. I could totally see you in the movies doing stuff like The Rock does and like Vin Diesel does. So I'm glad to hear you're making a successful transition.
This will be my first theatrical release, so I'm like super excited about it.
Yeah, congratulations on all your successes.
I appreciate it.
And good luck with the gym, and tell the guys over at Powerhouse I say hi.
We'll do.
I appreciate you giving us a call and catching us up, Dave.
Anytime.
Dave the Animal Batista crossing all works of life, bodybuilding, WWE, MMA, and now he is entering the movie arena. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Thanks a lot.
I appreciate it, man.
Well, this was a wild show with so much contest coverage going on this past weekend. So much going on in the way of bros versus pros, strength challenges. Ed and Betty Parisa had their very first ever Phoenix Europa show where they, for the first time ever, didn't showcase bodybuilding or fitness or figure events. It was all CrossFit, strength challenges, bros versus pros, and it went off without a hitch. Very successful. I hope they're going to have it again next year. And thanks for their support. Of course, Shannon Day, very successful Team Bombshell show down at the Fort Lauderdale Cup there. Dan Ray with the great pictures. Make sure you check those out on rxmuscle.com. Always the best in contest coverage. And of course, Chris Aceto is out at the British Grand Prix doing his great coverage. And he will meet up with Aaron Jabaka-Singerman next week in Prague, Czech Republic, for the pro show out there where Rodin attempts to make it 3 in a row in as many weeks and then 5 for the year. 5 wins for the year. I think that will be accomplished and that should be a huge accolade for him as well. I'll be home manning the boards as I always do. And I want to thank, of course, Dave the Animal Batista for calling in. What a great interview that guy is. Really nice guy. He just goes to show that, you know, never give up your dream. Here's a guy who couldn't even pay his bills, couldn't support his family. I'm sure he didn't really admit it, but I'm sure his family thought he was crazy trying to be a professional wrestler and a bodybuilder and with no money coming in. And he just never gave up. And eventually he made it. He became one of the biggest WWE superstars that there were, made a lot of money, got out before or anything seriously happened to him. He has a little MMA career that he just launched, had a fight won it. He says he's going to do it one more time, and I think that just got to get that out of his system. But I think really, more so than anything, I think Dave's going to be a huge Hollywood star, and I'm really proud to have gotten him here on an interview, and hopefully when he does make it big in Hollywood, he'll still come back and talk to us when we're just the little guys. Look for his new movie to come out November 1st, and then, of course, the Chronicles of Riddick, I think, Part 2 comes out early next year. That's with Vin Diesel. And, you know, it's sad, but, you know, we talked a little bit about my friend who tried to kill himself and commit suicide this past weekend, jumping off the Verrazano Bridge. You know, a lot of times as bodybuilders or as just people in general, we have, you know, depressive thoughts. Life sometimes doesn't seem worth living. Things go wrong. I mean, I understand the mindset. I mean, I tore my quadricep in India. The worst thing to have happen to you is to seriously injure yourself in a foreign country. It feels like there's just no hope almost, and you have to always have hope. And it was thanks to my good friends, Aaron Singerman, who were there at my side and helped me out, and Pierre Lamely, and the whole crew over there in India that, you know, got me mentally in the right place, got me back to the United States. My good friend Ron Norman put me in touch with his surgeon, Dr. Watnick. They fixed my leg. Now I'm on the mend, you know, and you know, I'm looking up. So you got to always try to think about the good stuff in life. Don't take for granted all the people who love you and all the good stuff. I think too many people focus on the bad, and I think when you focus on the bad, you get more bad. You want more good in your life. Focus on the good stuff. Think about the good times. And the sun will always come out tomorrow. Never forget that. That's my message for today. I'd like to thank, of course, Dave Bautista for stopping by. Until next week, remember, with Heavy Muscle Radio, the truth hurts.
Heavy Muscle Radio is a presentation of RxMuscle.com, the truth in bodybuilding. Tune in next week at the same time for another round with Dave Palumbo, only on Heavy Muscle Radio.